Sunday, Monday, Prong Newscast. Tuesday, Wednesday, Prong Newscast. Thursday, Friday, Prong Newscast. It's sandwich time, so get in line. We're ready to mosh with you. This pit is ours.
So 251.
This pit is ours.
So 251.
Hello, Ricky, Adam, too. John G, here are to mosh with you. We're always right, we can't be wrong, because we punk rock all week long. Sunday, Monday, Punk Newscast. Tuesday, Wednesday, Punk Newscast. Thursday, Friday, Punk Newscast. It's sandwich time, so get in line. We're ready to mosh with you. This Punk Newscast is yours and mine.
So 251.
This Punk Newscast is yours and mine.
So 251.
This podcast is on the fly. Your Punk Newscast.
All right, you are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and I think the, I don't want to say the original crew, because they're all dead at this point except for me, but you know, the modern classic lineup, I guess, is back today after last week's insane, overambitious, prolonged, I don't know what you want to call it, 250. So we're back. It's 251. I'm Adam White. I'm in Niagara Falls. I'm recording for you in my basement here. Joining me on tonight's show out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
Hey. Oh, I probably should. That's like a Bill Cosby reference, and I probably should not do Bill Cosby references anymore. Like, is Fat Albert safe? Can I do Fat Albert? Is that safe?
You're a lawyer.
Well, I mean, legally I can do it, but I'm saying morally with Bill Cosby's issues.
You're not a lawyer of morality, then.
A lawyer is probably the opposite of a lawyer of morality. I'm a lawyer of the law.
I suppose a lawyer of morality would be a priest, right?
Well, I suppose. I mean, can a priest settle moral issues for you? Like, if you've done bad things, can a priest, like, make a deal with God where God doesn't send you to hell?
Yes.
Like, I guess he can. Communion.
That's what they do.
Confession.
Right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. A priest is a lawyer of morality.
And speaking of priests, in sunny Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You're not through the seminary yet.
No, you know, that's not, I don't think I'm maybe I'm not, I don't think I'm too cut out for the seminary.
Anyways, yeah, I think we're going to keep it casual for the first part of this show, after all the craziness last week. It was kind of nice last week because I didn't have to do anything. I just kind of hung around and listened to interesting people with more things to say than me actually talk. So we're just going to chat. So what have you guys been up to? Let's talk about some shows that we've been out to. Ricky, you've solved one of our great mysteries, haven't you?
Yeah, as promised, I saw Strung Out. I think it was like maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago I talked about. We're all basically confused about Strung Out, and I listened to a few songs on their new album before I went to the show. It was at the West Hollywood House of Blues, and the lineup was really good. I mean, it was Pears opening, then La Armada, which are like this hardcore band from the Dominican Republic, I think, and they're maybe metal. They kind of like were on the cusp between the two. Red City Radio, and then Strung Out. And I gotta tell you, Red City Radio has totally upped their game. Pears kicked ass too. La Armada were awesome. I just don't know why they were on that bill, for mostly melodic punk mostly melodic punk show. Strung Out, though, I mean, they must have been doing something special because, first of all, I'm in the crowd just waiting for this for them to come on stage. And then, like, this preacher guy, like, creepy preacher guy gets on stage and, like, introduces their new music video that they forced everyone to watch before they get on stage.
Wait, what band is this?
Strung Out.
Like, an actual preacher? Or is it, like, a guar preacher?
I think it was more like that, probably. Like, he was just like this... It was like in an Alice Cooper kind of way.
Oh, okay.
That helps. And he turned
out... But hold on. They played their own music video before they came on stage?
Yes.
That's weird.
The weirdest thing of the whole show was I saw some woman twerking during Red City Radio. That was weird. So they finished the music video, then they get on stage and they just kind of kick things off. And I gotta tell you, maybe they were the first to do the kind of music they do, but there are so many better bands that do what they try to do. Their lead singer was not doing too hot, and I was with some friends who knew about them also. And they're just like, yeah, they really weren't into it. And it wasn't a bad performance. It was just kind of boring. There was a lot of quote unquote choreographed jumping around and stuff like that on stage, which is like, that's fun and everything. But I don't know. I think it's kind of almost like a cliche by now. There was also, I just had another thought. I just lost it. I don't know. I mean, instrumentally they were pretty good. There wasn't anything really grabbing me there. And it was like a medium fun show at that point. What I did notice, and this was my guess when we talked about them last time, is I think this was very much a nostalgia show for a lot of people that don't go to punk shows anymore and that were really probably only into the Epiphat punk thing during the 90s. And now these are all a lot older people that don't typically see them. And now Strung Out's back with a new album. They wanted to see them and then that's it. There's nothing else for them to pursue in terms of punk rock. But yeah,
that was a damning indictment.
Adam,
you and I get the hate.
But that's kind of like what happens. This isn't like an opinion. There's just a lot of people that probably like have families now that said, oh my God, I used to love this band when I was like in my early 20s or late teens. I want to go see them. There weren't a whole lot of like young people, and I'm talking like, you know, probably like 34, 33 and below or something like that, that were into them. but the place, the show did sell out. Overall, it was a great show though. Everyone knows like I can't recommend Pairs enough. Their show is awesome. They've really stepped it up since the last time I saw them. Red City Radio, though, holy shit, they just killed it. I think they can just keep going in popularity. I mean, if you listen to any of their records and then see them live, it's almost identical. I mean, they are that good live.
You didn't reveal anything. I guess we didn't assume about the Strung Out thing.
Honestly, everything that I was wondering and asking about and maybe predicting, it just came true. It wasn't a horrible show. It was just like, there was nothing like super like attention grabbing that was like, oh yeah, this is, I can't wait to see these guys again. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I wasn't crazy about it, you know? And also, it seemed like their lead singer seemed like he was a little off late that day. You could just tell, like, maybe he was just having an off night.
Well, John, you have any better luck down your end?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I love Philly and I hate Philly. I'm not a huge fan of the people that go to shows in Philly because they're obnoxious, but the Philly concert scene has been on fire this summer. I've seen Bad Canoes, Spoonboy, Downtown Boys, which were amazing in the past 2 weeks. I'm seeing World Inferno tomorrow. I'm seeing Andrew WK on Saturday, Malport Tidal Kids on Sunday, Pushing It to the Limit on Friday. Next week is Mikey Erg. Week after that is Crazy in the Brains and Rentiers. Week after that is Effed Up in Ceremony and Melvins. Insane amount of great shows in Philadelphia this summer. I saw Mischief Brew's record release show for This Is Not For Children. They did two shows, and it was awesome, man. It was really, like, the new Mischief Brew song, I don't know if you're a Mischief Brew fan or not, listeners. Mischief Brew used to be what people call a folk punk band, although they always kind of rejected that label. But pretty much since their first album, they've been becoming more and more punk, just straight up punk, and more anarcho. The newest album, This Is Not For Children, is their most mid-80s anarcho album. And I know people are going to think, like, crusty stuff. It's not crusty at all. Like, their last album was crustier. The last album was semi-crusty, I would say. Light on the crust. The new album is very much sort of like mid-period Steve Ignorant. So Schwarzenegger or Stratford Mercenaries or New Model Army. You know, very energetic, very clean, very driving punk rock. And the new album's great. Live, I was very surprised because on the first set, the songs were kind of like the album. Like, very clean, very energetic, very pulsating. Like, a lot of Mischief Brew songs swing back and forth in energy. The new songs are kind of Ramones-ish, I guess, if you will, or New Model Army-ish, or Conflict-ish, where, like, they start at 10 and just keep vibrating at 10 and it's super charged up. But then on the second set, they kind of transformed the new songs, and the new songs were kind of like their mid-period or even early songs where there's a real swinging of energy. So that being said, Mischief Brew is on fire. Live, they're probably as good as they've ever been. Actually, they are as good as they've ever been. They're phenomenal live. They need to put out a live album, and the new album's great. And then the night before that, I saw Dean Ween. I'm a big Ween fan. Ricky and Adam, you guys know about Ween. Do you guys know who Ween are?
The only reason why I know them is because they played Ocean Man in the SpongeBob movie.
Indeed, indeed. Adam, do you know Ween?
I don't know enough about Ween. I'm aware of Ween in the same way that I'm aware by name of a lot of their contemporaries, but
yeah. Well, Ween's cool. You could kind of say they're sort of modern Frank Zappas, although their music isn't quite as hard as Frank Zappa, but their music is very weird, and their music is, you're never sure if the songs are supposed to be funny, if they're supposed to be weird, or if they're supposed to be serious. And that's one of the most interesting things about Ween, and I love Ween. The annoying byproduct of Ween is they've got – well, that Ween actually broke up about 2 or 3 years ago. And since they broke up, both the Ween guys, Dean Ween and Gene Ween, have been doing their own thing. Gene Ween – or is it Dean Ween? No, Dean Ween formed the Dean Ween Group, which is kind of like – hard rock, Stooges-influenced rock, and they actually did a Stooges cover set once, and it's super awesome, it's super jacked up. Gene Ween has been doing, I guess, kind of more, not like more quieter, reflective stuff, but out of the blue, he announced that he was going to do about 10 Billy Joel shows, where all he did is he comes out and he sings Billy Joel, and that's what he did. I saw on Friday, and one of Gene Ween's biggest abilities is he can mimic like anybody. Like, Ween used to cover a Van Halen song, he sounds exactly like David Lee Roth on that. They used to cover Led Zeppelin, he sounds exactly like Robert Plant on that. And so he came out and they did like a Billy Joel set. I closed my eyes, it sounded like Billy Joel circa 1980. They basically just did Billy Joel's greatest hits volume 1 and 2, and they just kicked through them, and it was just a great fun time. And that's one of the things that I love about punk rock and rock in general. This, like, it's just an unexpected, weird thing that works completely. And it was so much fun. It was so great. The only byproduct is for some reason, Ween's audience is a majority of Ween's fan base are jam band guys. And I don't even know why, because Ween isn't a jam band. And the guy's new music isn't jam band at all. And the other half is like frat bros. And it's horrible. It's a like, people were like yelling and just talking during the whole show and throwing beer and just getting way too drunk. And I can't stand the Philly audience, at least at rock shows. The punk shows are a little bit better, but they're still not great. And I've actually been interviewing a bunch of musicians for another Philly band to get some no bands will agree with my idea that Philadelphia is a terrible place to play. And I don't know if that's because they don't want to alienate Philly fans or just that they're oblivious. But listen, I've seen shows in New York, D.C., San Francisco. I've seen shows in the central Pennsylvania. I've seen shows in Chicago. I've seen shows all over. Philly is by far the worst audience, but no bands will admit that. I wonder if I just have a prejudice against Philly because I'm from here, or just no bands will admit it. So I don't know. So you can tell us. If you've been to Philly, write in the podcast at punknews.org and let me know your opinion of the Philly show, because I think the Philadelphia audience is just despicable. Despicable. Anyway.
I have a question about that real quick.
Yeah.
I don't know if this – I mean, I've met – East Coast people that I've seen at shows in LA, and they've been wondering, like, what happens is at LA shows, at least, no one shows up for the first like two or three opening bands. They only come to see the headliners. Does that happen on the East Coast, or is that just a dick LA thing?
That's a dick LA thing.
That's what I thought.
What they do in Philadelphia is they show up and they start drinking early. By the time the main band comes out, they're wasted. Like when I saw David Johansen, they were so wasted they threw a bottle at David Johansen. You do not throw a bottle at David Johansen. When David Johansen is in your presence, you say, David, you get down on your knees and you praise him. You say, David Johansen, thank you for creating punk rock. You are a god among men. You do not throw a bottle at David Johansen.
Yeah, see, I wonder if that makes – does that make an – L.A. doesn't get that rowdy because security will just kick – I mean, well, security around here is pretty tough on that shit. But I wonder if that if the fact that people don't show up for the opening bands makes L.A. worse or not.
Well, see, in San Francisco, people show up for the opening bands.
They do.
And I'm anti-weed, but in San Francisco, everybody smokes weed. I like probably 70% of the audience at a rock show in San Francisco is smoking weed. So they're all, like, chilled and laid back in there to have a good time. Whereas in Philadelphia, they just get, like, super wasted and, like, just start arguments. Anyway, Adam, you saw Dilly Dally. How bad were the arguments at Dilly Dally?
I mean, like, so we've got to this point, we've decided that, like, everybody who goes to see Strung Out in L.A. is horrible, and everyone that goes to see anything in Philadelphia is horrible. So
that
we're,
is
we've
so
got, like,
trivializing what I said.
That's exactly what Ricky said.
I'll stand by that.
Yeah.
I didn't say people were horrible. I just said it was a nostalgia show for people.
You said they were basically dead.
What do you mean basically dead? Did I say that
their lives had ended and they've disconnected from music?
I think they've disconnected from punk rock. I think they just kind of like just stopped paying attention, probably.
Yeah, basically dead. Don't walk it back. So anyways.
Okay.
I went to a show. I haven't been to a show in a little while, kind of because of the baby and just because I've been like super busy. So it feels like it's been a while since I've gotten out to anything. And so it was really nice to finally just, you know, go be at a show with a crowd of people, drink a beer, watch bands. Like,
did you throw a bottle at David Johansen when he walked on stage?
David Johansen didn't show for some reason. But anyways, though, so I went. It was a Dirty Nail show. The Dirty Nail are kind of local. So I go see them like two or three times a year, it feels like, and I love it every time. Nail wasn't playing with their usual drummer because he fell off a bike, which worries me because, like, that's how anyone that's in a rock band injures or kills themselves these days, right? They fall off bikes. So that was worrying, but Nail played a good set. But their opener was Dilly Dally. I played Dilly Dally on this show like two or three times. Female fronted band out of Toronto that plays really kind of like sloppy, crazy, grungy, punk rock. And their set was amazing. And the whole time I was watching them, like, my only connection with this band right now is like stuff that I've heard on Bandcamp or anything like that. I'm just sitting there in awe this whole time. And I'm just like, this is the greatest thing that I've seen in such a long time. And, you know, I want to follow this band around and go to all their shows and buy all their stuff. But it was one of these things where, like, they didn't have stuff. So I have all this appreciation built up and I want to give you money, but you haven't given me any opportunity to give you money. So hopefully, they will, I don't know, make some records or shirts or something like that. But yeah, Dilly Dally is really good. You should go see Dilly Dally. Totally, absolutely worth your time. I want to bring up something though from this show, I want to do this in a way where I'm not actually like talking shit about the band in question that did this, because they weren't really that bad about it. It just kind of like brought up the memory of other bands that have done this to me.
And you were triggered.
I was triggered. Yes. Isn't that what it says? Trigger warning, stupid things that happen at shows. So one of the things that happens a lot in my area, and by my area, I'm going to call this like small town in Ontario. So, you know, outside Toronto and whatever, which I assume is probably like small town anywhere else in like, say, like the northeastern US. If you go to a show and it's a punk show, it's not necessarily going to be a bunch of punk bands that are playing it, especially if they're, you know, smaller bands or locals or anything like that, only because population wise, you don't necessarily have a whole bunch of punk bands sitting around, you know, that are going to play that show. And even if your town does have enough punk bands in it, you don't want them all playing every show because then you would hate them all. So, you know, the lineups are almost by necessity mixed up a little bit around here. You have stuff from different genres is happening and it's cool. You have some indie rock bands coming out. You have the occasional metal band, you have hardcore bands, whatever. No one thinks too much of it. But one of the bands that was playing this show, it felt like they were really self-conscious that they were playing a punk show and they were not a punk band. And they kept mentioning it. But not in a way. It wasn't that they were demeaning the fact that they were playing a punk show. It almost felt like they were like nervous of the fact that they were playing a punk show. Like, you know, here's our next song. It's fast. It's a little bit punk rock. You guys might like it. Right. Or something. Right. And I'm just thinking that like, you guys are local. You don't need, you know, that people don't really give too much of a shit around here. Like, you don't need to do that. Like, you don't need to justify what kind of music you're going to play when you get on stage. And I just think that it would be far better for everyone, including the bands, if they just got on stage and just confidently played whatever it is that they happen to play. But I feel like that's happened to me two or three times in the area where it's been a punk show, or it's been even it's happened before where it's been like a kind of non-punky headliner, but still kind of a weird independent band, but Punk News has got behind it and, I don't know, giving away tickets or something like that. I've seen guys get on stage and like make like a joke about, hey, this is our punk rock show or something like that. And I'm just like, why is this bare mentioning? Like, just play your shit. Like, I'm a little bit bewildered by it because it's not condescension, but clearly the bands feel, you know, it matters enough that they need to talk about it. And again, this being a small town, we, you know, it's not like at our punk shows, the room is filled with like a bunch of, you know, leather jacket crust punks and stuff like that. Like, we don't have that many people to flush out whole scenes of genre specific individual music fans. Like, we have one Turbojugend in the area, right? We got like one of them. He's awesome. I love him, but he's the only one that I see. So it's not like we have like whole crowds of people that are showing up expecting like a completely, you know, genre specific blinders on form of music playing. So the fact that bands feel that they need to, I don't know, to apologize or to draw attention to it is weird to me. And it stuck out to me. It's been stuck in my head for the past day. And I'm like, would I do that? I don't know if I'd do that if I was playing the show.
Actually, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just rambling on that.
Let me piggyback off that. Because of the kind of music that I've been listening to lately, I've been going to a lot of house shows. And in some ways, the house shows kind of bumming me out. Because I love the high energy, the jacked up, the punk rock show. But at house shows, a lot of bands just kind of get up there. And like, they don't even say their name. And they play like 7 songs, 8 songs. And they're like, well, what should we play next? And they talk among themselves. Listen, if you're not there to kick my ass, why are you there? I mean, you know, bands come from out of town to play house shows. Like, you know, from Massachusetts or whatever. You're spending money to be there. So kick my ass. You know what I mean? Like make me stand up and pay notice that you're a great band. I think with house bands are guys have scared of rocking out too much or putting on too much of a show because people will think they're, you know, kind of being, I don't know, the antithesis of punk rock, but I disagree. Bands at house shows, you know, I say go for 110%, rock the hell out. You know, maybe one person might say, oh, well, they're trying too hard, but everybody else will be wowed by your amazing presentation. I cite Bad Canoes. I cite Pushing It to the Limit, who just kicked the shit. I cite Westboro Baptist Choir, who just – I cite Posers down in Philadelphia, who just kicked the shit out of the house. Or they come up and they just, you know, they go all in. They blast it like they're playing a huge stadium, or maybe not a, like they're playing a theater, like the Stooges. Like they're there to just like destroy the house. If you're not there to destroy the house, why are you spending money to be there? That's my question. So I agree, Adam. Confidence is key when it comes to the punk rock show. Confidence is king.
Yeah, like I don't care at all that you're not up there playing Ramon's Core or whatever. But it's just like don't feel like you're second guessing yourself. Like that's weird to me.
Indeed.
I don't want to imply that it's easy to be on stage in front of a bunch of people playing a show or anything like that. But like, you figure like as part of your performance, you should be exuding confidence, unless the fact that you have no confidence is your act.
What I've also been noticing at smaller shows too is that these small bands get up there, they play their sets great, but in between songs, you can see kind of a little bit of into their insecurity. And I get, you know, made fun of for talking about how important this is, but I think working between song banter is really important. And just to repeat that, oh yeah, this isn't that, we're not really a punk band, but we're happy to be here. Like over, I don't know how many times they said it, but they say it like, you know, two or three times. It's going to get old and people are just going to be like, oh, and they might just get bored and just kind of get discouraged.
The whole time you're thinking, man, if this was a Blink-182 show, I'd be hearing some jokes about dicks right now.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be like that. It's just like, you know, you know, I feel
that the 90s has ruined stage banter for me.
That's true. I mean,
because you go see a
No Effect show. They've got that shit down in between songs. They're pretty funny, and they don't have to be funny. They can just be like, they could just say different stuff. I don't know, random stupid facts, whatever, just to keep you going, keep the crowd going in between songs. I think it's really important.
I like the random stupid facts idea. Like, do you guys know what the tallest mountain peak in Africa is?
That'd be like
Snapple cap facts. I don't know. But I think being able to work the crowd in between songs is important. I mean, maybe just like showing that you're grateful for being here or whatever. Or just don't say anything at all. Just say, hey, we're this band, and you play through the songs without stopping too much, and then you're done. That's it.
I don't know. If they just stop and say they're sorry every once in a while, that might.
That just is a downer. No one wants to hear that.
Like Adam, like their shtick is that they're like really self-confident. Like after every song, they apologize for how bad it was. It's like, oh, we're really sorry about that. That'd be like a really funny shtick.
That's just a Canadian thing. All the bands up here do it. Okay. Anyways, what time is it? It's pretty late. We've been going a little bit long. How about I play a song and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some stuff.
Yeah, man. Let's kick
it. That's good.
Cool. All right. We're going to do that. So I want to mention a band that that I always love talking about these guys, because the few times that I have met them in person, they've been really the most gracious band I think that I've met in the past few years. It's a band out of Burlington, Ontario, called the Penske File, three-piece pop punk band. They've got a new record that is coming out in Canada on Stomp Records, and they just announced that in the U.S. it's coming out on AF Records, which is Anti-Flag's label. The foreshadowing, we'll talk about Anti-Flag later in the show, so stay tuned. But anyways, the record is called Burn Into the Earth. It's the band's, I want to say it's their second or third full length at this point, but it's definitely going to be the one that gets the widest release. It's, if anything's going to kind of put these guys onto the map, it'll be this. They play a super likable, super easy to get into melodic punk rock that I've got to imagine is totally perfect for the punk news crowd. Given the, I don't know, but whatever we think of orgcore these days. So like people will like it. They're super likable and they're super nice and they're super happy that we talk about them. And yeah. So anyways, I want to talk about them some more. So here's a song from the new record by the Penske File. This song is called Party Time Liars. It is the fourth track on the new full length, which is in stores today. So by the time anyone hears this on Sunday, I'm in stores now. So this is Party Time Liars by the Penske File off of Burn Into the Earth.
down doors. To the light. Of the party time liars, kings and queens of the party time liars, kings and queens of the party time liars. We got too close to the flames. We only have ourselves to blame. We got too close to the fire. Now we're just kings and queens of the party time liars. Party time liars.
Okay, we are back. Before we get too far into actually talking about news, because who else has to talk about news? Do you guys get any records lately?
Well, nothing wrong with a chill out episode once in a while, Adam. Nothing wrong with a chill out episode, you know? I mean, just hanging out. Ricky, man, what'd you get?
Well, the last time, it's been a while since the last time we did this. So, I mean, I had trouble, like, getting everything, but of course, I kind of go overboard when it comes to buying records. So I know we were talking a lot about Ceremony the past few episodes and how much everyone, I think the consensus was that Ceremony's Rohnert Park LP was amazing. So I said I got that, but I also was able to snag a the EP that came with it, the six seven inch on white vinyl. And I think I kind of stole it. I thought only 300 copies in white, which I was very happy about.
I got at the record release show, Ricky.
Because you were Gilman, that's why. I wasn't at the Gilman show. Then I saw Laura Jane Grace and Adam Willard before they went to Punk Rock Bowling, and she was selling that Against Me 7-inch that I was trying so hard to get. So I was able to snag that. Only $5 this time. Are you kidding? I was, oh God. Anyway, I was happy to get that. My Red City Radio self-titled LP came, which I really like that album. Again, their show's great. It came in like a burnt orange thing. And then this has also been like the one, another one was, Teenage Bottle Rocket's new album is like my favorite album they've put out so far. So I actually pre-ordered that one. It came like in this cool, it was like red, white, and blue tricolor record, which I thought was awesome. And then this goes back a few years, but I was able to get one of the first pressings of the Nightbirds main from the Massive 7-inch. And that is kind of cool because usually what they do is their first few hundred or so records that they pressed, it's either like color, but this time they pressed it. 500 of them came in like a heavyweight 7-inch, which was like 70 grams, which weighed like 70 grams. And it was just in black, but I thought it was really cool. I love that song. Love Nightbirds. I saw that Red Scare's new, like, new band called Success, and their new album, Radio Recovery, which, again, if you like Red City Radio, that is an amazing record. It's really good. It's one of the albums I kept forgetting to get, but I was able to get it at their show. Also really nice guys. John, you will like this. I was bored, went to Amoeba one night, and I got the Jello Bay Offer on New Orleans album.
Oh, nice, nice.
And I managed to find the 7-inch that came with it.
Nice.
Because I was so intrigued by the label on it that says "Rejected by Record Store Day."
Nice.
Interview
with Jello Biafra about that very 7-inch coming up soon on Punk News. Stay tuned.
Nice. Okay. I'm interested in that. Then the Menzingers put out. I've been waiting for this forever. The Menzingers on Red Scare released the Menzingers "I Was Born" EP, which is only a digital EP until Record Store Day this year. So I actually ordered from the band, which came on blue vinyl. I don't know if have either of you heard of Blackbird Rum?
Yeah, I've seen.
They're
on the last SFX records, and I actually saw them a couple of times. I've seen them, and they're actually going to be on the new Leftover Crack album.
Yeah, they're really good. I reviewed their new album, Destroying, and I got it like this. It was like a Coke bottle with like different color splatter all over it. And that album's so fucking heavy. If you're looking for something different, definitely like check it out. If you like really, really heavy, folk punk with a lot of like imagery in the lyrics, it's really good. I wasn't a huge fan of the last release this band put out, but I love this EP, the Flatliners Fangs EP on white vinyl from Fat. Awesome. That B-side Fang song is so good. It's the closest I think they've come to like a hardcore song. I'm sure no one will be surprised by this, but I have my pre-order in for a color copy of Bad Cop, Bad Cop's Not Sorry. So I'm waiting for that, which I think comes out in like 2 weeks, and that's about it.
Well, I go to the record store every week, so I've got three records that I'm going to talk about. First of all, I got Nico's Procession 12-inch single. Adam, what do you know who Nico is?
Velvet Underground, right?
Right. She was on the first Velvet Underground album. She started her own career shortly afterwards, and she never really became super famous, but there's some hardcore Nico fans out there. Well, this 12-inch Procession is really cool. On the B-side are two live tracks, Secret Side and Femme Fatale. Femme Fatale is a Velvet Underground song, but the A-side is what makes this super, like, this is actually a pretty hard record to find. But the A-side is Procession, and then the Velvet Underground's All Tomorrow's Parties. But who was it produced by? Martin Hannett in 1982. Of course, Adam and Ricky, who is Martin Hannett? The Joy Division's producer. So, what this is essentially, it's Martin Hannett and Nico doing a Nico song and then a Velvet Underground song, which he sang on, in a Joy Division style. I mean, Joy Division is not on this record, but it sounds like they are because of the way Martin Hannett produced it. So, like, if you like Joy Division, if you like Nico, if you like Velvet Underground, this is an extremely, extremely interesting record to check out. I think this is the only place to find the version of these two songs that way. She re-recorded these songs many times, but this is the only place to find them that way. So, it's really cool. It's Nico doing like Nico songs and Velvet Underground songs in a Joy Division style. And it works so well because she's got this very cold, you know, but sweet voice with this, you know, massive, powerful, cold, heavy music in the background. It's pretty wild. Second thing that I've been getting out is, you know, I'm a Rolling Stones maniac. They're my favorite band. They've been my favorite band for, I guess, almost 20 years now. I've got pretty much, if not every, officially released Rolling Stones recording. Except that I just found out a lot of their promo singles from the late 70s and early 80s have different or edits, mixes of the single itself, which is super exciting for me. It means there's slightly different versions of Rolling Stones songs. My favorite Rolling Stones album is Some Girls, which is basically their punk rock album where they do like music in a punk rock style. I think it's the best. It might be the best album ever. They put out a bunch of singles with that album, and the singles basically look kind of like Sex Pistols singles, like just with the art, very punk rock. What's cool is if you get the promo version of these singles, there's a different edit of the single on the B-side. There's one for Beast of Burden, there's one for Shattered. I got the Shattered 7-inch single, and it's got a different mix on the B side. It's a shorter, harder version of the song Shattered, which is a really punk rock song. So if you are, this is probably of interest to maybe one other person listening to the podcast, but if you are a Rolling Stones maniac like myself, and you like the punk rock out of the Rolling Stones, which is my favorite version, if you seek out the promo version of their punk rock singles, the B side is a edit of the punk rock songs they have. You can't get the normal version because that usually has just another song from the album or Everything is Turning to Gold. But if you get the promo version, it's got a different version on the B-side, which is totally badass. Here's my last one. If you guys remember, about, I don't know, 4 months ago, we debuted an entire album on Punk News by The Flames. And the reason that was special is because it turned out that album was never released. And Punk News, and it was from like 1980, and Punk News tracked down the main guy from The Flames, and we posted that for the first time ever, that album. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Well, the record store that I go to, Jupiter Records, check that out, is they had a bunch of promo records there. A promo record from the 70s is basically a normal version of the record. Maybe the labels are different, but it also has a promo kit and a picture on the inside. And I got a bunch of really – I got a Black Uhuru promo record with a promo picture. I got a Yellow Man promo record with a promo picture. I got a something else that was really bad. I can't remember. Something else that was really badass and super cool promo record. But I also got this record by this band called Brave New World. The album is called The Law of Series. This band is from Ambler, PA, which is kind of outside Philadelphia, but not even really. I looked this band up. The only mention of this record online anywhere is in Discogs, and it's just a picture of this record. No one else seems to know anything about this record, so I bought this record. I checked it out. It's kind of cool. It's not The Flames good. It's basically kind of like new wave, late 70s synth rock. It's all right. But I opened it up, and what should I find inside this record? But
some dude's phone number.
Yes. Precisely.
Oh, my God.
What? Really?
Really, really. Oh, crap. I just lost. Well, Adam, you talk about what records you find. Let me find this thing. And then we'll get. So I'll be right back. Adam, you talk about it. You talk about what records you found. I'll be right back.
Oh, this is where John is now going to track down some poor person that wants to be left alone and drag them kicking and screaming back into the spotlight. And oh God, okay. Anyways, yeah, I'll be quick. There was a few things that I picked up over the past week that I was excited to get my hands on. Finally, there was a 2014 reissue of the last Joey Ramone record before he died. Don't Worry About Me. Which I loved and I reviewed very kindly on Punk News. If you want to go read a really horrible old review that I wrote at some point, but they put it out again on vinyl last year. It's on white. It's very nice looking. It is a nice package.
Great album. Worry About Me, great album.
Not yeah, it's a great album. There's so many like Ramones regulars that are involved in it. I mean, like Daniel Ray is involved with the whole thing. Marky's playing on most of the tracks.
Captain Sensible's on it, which is cool.
Captain Sensible's on it. Oh, and the Misfits Jerry Only's on it. Who else? Dr. Chud is on it. Like there's all kinds of people from that era and that scene and everything that are on the thing. You know, covers of the Stooges on there, covers of Louis Armstrong on there. So anyways, though, Don't Worry About Me is a lovely, lovely little record. So anyways, I was happy to finally find that thing. The other thing that I wanted to do, and this is really more of a pitch than a mention of something that I physically have in my hand right now. But last year on this podcast, I talked a lot about a band out of Ottawa called New Swears and an album that they had called Junk Food Whenever or Junk Food Forever, Bedtime Whenever or something like that. Anyways, it was only available in Europe and online, but it is now finally available in North America. The fine people over at Dirt Cult Records have put the thing out. And Dirt Cult is a cool little label and they put all kinds of neat stuff. So you need to go there and look up the New Swears record and buy it because it's great. And it's really fun and it's not, and there's not a lot of these. They're printing like, I think 500 of them total. So go get this. It's absolutely worth getting. It is one of the top records of last year. If you ask me, but speaking of Dirt Cult, they put out something else that, bears mention if you are at all into you're all into like pop punk of the let's say of the Dirt Nap variety, and there was a band that a lot of us liked that played it out of Sudbury, Ontario, called Statues. Statues played a few years ago. They had two or three records that were put out. Most of them were available via Deranged. But they were super influential, at least as far as other bands in Ontario go. If you talk to like Crusades are super into Statues. But one of the guys that was one of the principals and the singer for Statues was a guy named Rob Seaton. And he has a new band, which is a new two-piece. It's probably not two-piece, but two singers, him and his fiance, Sarah. I don't remember her last name off the top of my head, and it's not jumping out at me. But anyways, so Rob and Sarah have this band. The band is called Der Faden, which is, I guess, German. Der Faden. Which, as metal as it sounds, they put out like super poppy pop rock, but is just totally wonderful. So they have a 7-inch that is now out also on Dirt Nap, and you should go check it out. At least check it out online. If you have any kind of like soft spot in your body for like sunny power pop, this is it done just about as well as it can be done. So anyways, Der Faden has a 7-inch that's out. You should go check it out. Both the Der Faden 7-inch and the Statues, new Swears LP are somewhere in the mail coming to my house right now. But anyways, wanted to mention those. They're cool. John, what did you find in this random new wave record?
So if the Punkies listeners remember, the Flames record that I had the guy's phone number on it, and we called it, and we eventually got in contact with him. If you haven't checked out the Flames record at Punk News, you definitely should. I love the record. I'm probably a little attached to it, so you might like it, but I think it's a really neat record. Well, on this Brave New World record, what do I find inside of it? A manila folder with three phone numbers written on it. One for Mark and one for Gary, guys in the band. I haven't called it yet. But on top of that, this manila folder is unopened. And because it's a 30-year-old manila folder, I can't see what's inside. And I think we should open it live right now on the Punk News Podcast. What do you guys think about that?
Oh, I hope this is anthrax.
I hope it's drugs.
So I break it. Now, I suspect it's going to be a promo one sheet because I bought it from a collection that had promos in it. But we're going to find out. So this is me breaking the seal. Can you hear that?
Yep.
All right, here we go, boys.
It'd be cool if it was somehow full of like live bees.
Well, you see, it's from the 70s, so I'm hoping it's payola money, but we'll see. All right, here we go. And it is. Good morning. Brave New World is currently seeking club dates in your area, and we feel your club may be appropriate venue for them. Enclosed, please find the Brave New World press kit, a cassette copy of their debut album, a VHS videotape of highlights from a typical live show. None of that is in here. One of our agents will contact you in the near future with further details on Brave New World. Since Brave New World is anxious to establish themselves in your area, I'm sure we will be able to work out a very attractive price for your satisfaction. And then it's just talks about gigs they've played and some press clippings. That's kind of cool. But nothing crazy. Anyway, that's kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
So that's it. I think maybe we'll call this Brave New World phone number on a Punk News Podcast in the future. Although I am kind of worried about trying to repeat a basically one in a million shot. You know what I'm saying? So I'll have to think about that. Anyways.
Yeah, like, you know, you only get one of those. The next time you try this, it's just someone that's going to turn around and kill you.
Indeed. Let's talk some news. Let's talk some news, man. I mean,
happen this week? Yeah, stuff happened this week. So there's a bunch of festivals. There's a bunch of music that came out. So let's rush through some of this stuff because people have heard us talking about all kinds of shit that is not news up until now. So The Fest, of which we are a sponsor, of course, has announced a few additions to this year's lineup. The new bands that have been announced include Toys That Kill, Nothington, Underground Railroad to Candyland. They had a really good record that came out this year. The Moms, Benny and the Jet Rodriguez, Sand Fleas, and Weston. So Fest 14 takes place on October 30th through to November 1st in 2015 down in Gainesville, Florida, of course. And we previously announced all sorts of acts that are playing that thing, including Lagwagon, the Menzingers, Mustard Plug, Kepi Ghoulie, Chump, Nightbirds, and many, 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 many more. So anyways, new bands added the Fest. You know, that's happening. John, you got anything to say about this? You want to keep rolling?
Just that we're a sponsor, so you should go down there. We'll probably have people down there. Kepi Ghoulie is always a must-see. Nightbird's always a must-see. A lot of people are saying there's not a whole lot of huge headliners this year, but I'm saying even without that, and there's still more to be announced, it's looking really hot. The medium-sized acts, if you will, are absolutely killer. If you go to Fest, I'm sure you're going to have a great time. Kepi, Nightbird, so many great bands. We're going to have more Fest stuff at Punk News coming up soon. Unrelated, Anti-Flag, who released their album last week and spoke to Punk News about the album. They've just released a new video. The video is for the track Brandenburg Gate, and it's off American Spring, which is out now. And it's got Tim Armstrong on it. Ricky, did you check out this video? Are you pro Anti-Flag? Are you pro Tim Armstrong? Did you like the video?
I've been against Anti-Flag, but I haven't been on the Anti-Flag train, and I think we've talked about that before. After that interview you did with one of the band members, I kind of like got a lot more perspective on the band. I can tolerate now. I saw the video. I thought the song for them was kind of mid-range. Cause they're usually a lot more abrasive and a lot more, and aggressive. This time they're kind of more, a little bit more laid back. I thought the video was interesting, but at the same time, I couldn't escape that feeling that maybe like this video was trying too hard to be controversial in terms of its story. Like, you know, that kid with like he's strapped himself with dynamite, but it turns out to be like confetti bombs or whatever. And he doesn't blow himself up. And then the two, priests that kiss, like, which I guess that's a thing they want to do. That's fine. I just thought, like, is this all necessary? Or is this really like, okay, let's charge into the revolution, kind of a provocative video kind of a thing? But I have been hearing one quick thing. I have been hearing good things about the record. But that's
yes, actually, so have I. I mean, it's worrying that given how much of a real issue big gay party bombs are in the world, that they would make light of big gay party bombs in their video.
I mean, am I the only one that feels that way about the story in this video, or am I off base completely?
I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
I'm strangely okay with this whole thing, and I'm usually even though I'm pretty much politically on the same side of a lot of the stuff that Anti-Flag are probably on about.
Yeah,
I've always felt them to be a little bit too messagey for me, and too sloganeering and this and that. And that's usually the bias that I walk into their stuff with, is that and what I've found with this is that I think for the very reason that you mentioned, like, because this song isn't as super angry or anything, but is more of just a pleasant little rock song, I didn't find I minded it that much. And it's catchy, it's kind of stuck in my head, it seems like a song that the band it doesn't seem juvenile. And I feel that maybe sometimes Anti-Flag can, rightly or wrongly, kind of come off as being too idealistic, which always ends up striking me as too young sometimes for the actual age that all those guys are. So this, I don't know, this sat right with me, where a lot of Anti-Flag stuff kind of rubs me the wrong way for whatever reason. So I'm okay with it. From a musical standpoint, I haven't heard the record. If the whole record is stuff that is this tempo and this level of aggression, that might work against it, because you're getting into that territory that John likes to talk about, where the band's not daring you enough.
Right.
But you know, as a song, as a single, I was cool. I'm cool with it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, for me, I've never been a huge Anti-Flag fan. I interviewed Chris No. 2. I found him to be extremely eloquent. So it's not the band's message is generally simple. I think that's not because they're not they don't have it's not that they don't have the ability to write complex messages. It's that they're interested in making a direct, bold statement, if you will. I'm not a huge fan of the band. I like the, I got to mention something else too. Now that I think about it, but I think Anti-Flag is basically punk 101. The idea is to introduce younger kids to punk and introduce the concept that music can have a political message or any kind of message, that music doesn't have to be vapid. And I commend Anti-Flag for that. And I think Anti-Flag is performing the function that Anti-Flag should perform. Am I a mega fan? No. But I think what they're doing has value, has merit, and if anything, I would hope that it gets kids to think critically. I don't think Anti-Flag is interested in brainwashing kids. I think it's getting to kids to say, you can think about your surroundings. And I think that's what something like this does. And I support them. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan, but I think what they're doing is a good and necessary step. And it's better that they're doing this than we get another song about whiskey, you know. That being said, I got to strike. I can't stand the trolls. I'm loath to mention the trolls. But when I interviewed Chris number two from Anti-Flag, one troll who really got my gall, he was like, how can you interview this band? You said you didn't like them in a previous podcast. Listen, and I'm speaking to this troll directly and other people. Being a music fan and being a critic, but even being a music fan, isn't an all or nothing game. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to love everything a band does to enjoy them as a band. And I don't have to hate everything a band does if I don't like them. You can be on the fence, you can like most of their stuff, you cannot like some of their stuff. Further, an interview is not a tacit acknowledgement or a tacit thumbs up of a band. Just because I interview a band doesn't mean that John Gentile thinks they're a great band. If I interview a band, it means I think they have something interesting to say. Further, maybe I don't think they have anything interesting to say, and I'm just interviewing them as a service to people that might be interested at punk news. So when one of these knuckleheads that says, you said you didn't like this band, how dare you interview this band? Being a fan of music in general is not an all-or-nothing game. You can interview a band that you don't even like if you think they have something interesting to say, which I've done before. So the point of an interview is to learn about the subject. The point of an interview is not for John Gentile or whatever interviewer to say, boy, isn't this band great. Although that can be part of an interview. It doesn't have to be. So that's been bothering me for the past 3 or 4 weeks because, you know, bands read the interviews and they sign on and they say, oh, this guy said he didn't like the band, but then he interviewed us. And that's fine. If that's what you want to post, it's true. I stick behind it. I don't think Anti-Flag is the greatest band, but I think they have interesting things to say. But if your sole reason is to make my, quote, job or my hobby of interviewing bands more difficult, that's bullshit. So quit it.
Yeah, I think we're talking – I'm talking about the same troll that actually gave me shit too. And I just – after reading that interview and just kind of taking it all in, I kind of changed my mind a bit and realized that same kind of thing. Like, yeah, maybe this is just a – they're just more of a quote-unquote punk rock starter band, which isn't a bad thing. Green Day was that for me. And now and we all know how most of us feel about Green Day now. But I don't know why it was such a black and white issue with that person.
Yeah, well, that particular person thinks you have to think everything that band does 10 out of 10 if you're a fan at all. You know,
yeah.
That's just not – I mean, honestly, if you think everything a band does is 10 out of 10, it means you're probably not a fan. It means you probably just want the band to be as great as you think they are, and they're probably not that great. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm a Melvins maniac. Not everything I do is a 10 out of 10. But
right.
Anyway, I just had to get off my back. Speaking of a guy that thinks everything's 10 out of 10, Adam, I think you got a Ricky interest story where Ricky gives this band everything a 10 out of 10.
Oh, here we go. So, members of Direct Hit and Galactic Cannibal have come together to form a new band called Eradicator. They're planning to release a 10-inch this coming October. They have a song, which is also called Eradicator and features badminton, I guess, or tennis. I don't know. Ricky, you can elaborate on this band's imagery for me. but anyways, it's on Punkties right now. I thought this was kind of cool. Ricky, you're in tune with this. What's going on in here? Who is this? What's going on?
Yeah, so I mean, we did talk to Nick Woods of Direct Hit. He's involved with this band. We talked to him on episode 250. We kind of asked him about this, and it's kind of like, for those of you who've been like into whatever Nick does and his the other band he was in called Galactic Cannibal, which only put out one fantastic album, but unfortunately they're done. This is kind of like some of the this is like one or two people from Galactic Cannibal and Nick and I think their Direct Hits drummer Danny getting and just kind of doing a few songs for this EP. They, if you haven't heard Galactic Cannibal, it's kind of like, it definitely has direct hit influence, obviously, but it's like this really angry Ramones core pop punk. And that's why I kind of joked about it being like a pop core than popcorn last time. Anyway.
I thought that joke was funny.
Thank you. And yeah, I mean, if it's just like this, it's not like this really like super melodic thing that you might hear from like Mass Intruder, but what they do is they take like the Ramone thing and just basically scream. And it's not hardcore because it still has like a fairly mid-paced tempo, or sometimes they go even faster, but not like super fast like hardcore or anything like that. I thought the song was great. I am really excited to review and hear the rest of this EP. And it's not only me, by the way, that gives this band great ratings. I did not review Brainless God, which was fantastic, and which I think got a 9 on Punk News. And Galactic Cannibal, I believe their album also got a 9, and I didn't review that. I reviewed Dome Splitter, which I gave a 9, and then their 7-inch they put out with on Red Scare, I gave that a 9 too, because that was just, both of those, all of the stuff they put out was just fucking brilliant pop punk. What do you guys think of this song? And what do you think of Direct Hit?
I was a fan. I was one of the people that had not heard a lot before Brainless God, and I got on board with that. I still do have a little bit of a trepidation when that album gets into some of the more super pop punky areas that it goes.
Yeah.
And there's shades of where that band will go into like complete Blink-182 pop punk territory. And I have a hard time getting down with that, cause it's just not where I am right now. But the fact that there's so much variety on that record kind of brings it around and brings it back. So I'm cool with that. This is far more my style, this Eradicator track. So I'm really interested to hear what this is, and I liked this. So
if I can recommend the Galactic Cannibal album, if you're into this, I think you'll also like that album too. Just real quick before we hear from John, I think Punk News is also a sponsor of Dumberfest, which is Nick Woods' festival we also interviewed him about. So that's going to be happening in June. And you can check out all the bands that are coming up on Facebook. But John, what do you think?
I dug this track. It actually sort of reminded me of Off a little bit, the way it's like super jacked up, super revved up. And is that Nick Woods singing? Who's singing?
I don't think so. I think it might – I don't think it's him singing. I think he's doing backup.
It's got kind of that early West Coast punk vibe. I guess the modern interpretation of that early West Coast punk vibe. Listeners know I love early West Coast punk. It's cool. I dug it. I'll definitely check out the album when it comes out.
Cool.
Okay. Well, one more little story here before we get to the other big fest news that happened this week. And this is just a brief one. Just something that was kind of neat here was Fat Mike and Scott Sturgeon of NoFX and Leftover Crack, respectively, who were labeled as two atheist Jews in the video associated with this story. They were shown rig sweeping in the Tenderloin. So they were doing some work for the San Francisco Drug Users Union, basically wandering around the streets of San Francisco, picking up needles and stuff like that they found on the streets. Now, this is a volunteer organization that consists of drug users, both former and current, as well as people who care about the welfare of drug users. And so they're out there trying to make a difference in their own little way here. So anyways, they have a 3 or 4 minute video of Mike and Stizza wandering about, picking up needles, interacting with people on the streets, doing their thing. Ricky, what do you got to say about this?
I thought they did it kind of like in this fun, goofy way, but also doing like a really cool, interesting thing for San Francisco. I think that little bit with the fake yuppie was was pretty funny. I mean, overall, I think it's a good thing. I mean, if the thing is, I think what this organization and what I think the message of the video is kind of portraying was like, I think it was kind of advocating for those who are on like heroin and shooting up drugs to really not to really get people to not use the dirty needles if they're going to do those drugs and possibly spread HIV, other diseases, and instead hopefully go and do, like, I think there are needle exchanges, at least in San Francisco. There probably are, because San Francisco kind of, they're allowed, you're kind of allowed to do almost anything with, and it also, it's probably promote, it's also kind of promoting a, you know, maybe a different look at the American war on drugs, at least, and really just kind of going more about harm reduction, at least, and decriminalizing drugs to at least stop arresting people for really not hurting anyone but themselves, and hopefully educating people to, instead of, to not use drugs at all, and instead, and not hopefully, and hopefully not arrest a ton of people for not really hurting anyone. I think they did it in kind of a cool way, and it's kind of cool to see these two punk rock, I don't know if I should say icons, but people, I mean, people definitely look up to Sturgeon and Fat Mike, so it's kind of neat to see them, you know, helping out the San Francisco community, at least. I know this story, just one quick side note about this story, it didn't get a whole lot of comments on the actual story on Punk News, but on the Facebook, it got heated. So, I mean, shit went down. It got shared over 150 times, and it got over 600 likes. And it got some really heated discussions. I mean, usually it's like the trolls decided not to yell at each other on the Punk News story, and instead just take it out on Facebook. I don't know if you guys read through it, but it got kind of fucking, it got pretty fucking brutal. But I don't know, what did you guys think about the video?
Well, I thought this video was absolutely hilarious. I love how they start finding needles, and then, like, they start finding them in, like, refrigerators and behind coffee pots and stuff. And then they start, like, eating salad with the needle tongs, which is hilarious. Fun fact, the yuppie that they throw needles at near the end, that's Avi of Silver Sprocket Records, which is hilarious. And actually, just my short tenderloin story is, you know, if you watch, like, movies from the 70s, like they have, like, quote, like, well, they have, like, pimps, and they wear, like, those big hats and the fur jackets and stuff. Like, I either think that was real, or I thought that was real in the 70s, but not real anymore. If you go down to the tenderloin now, you see, like, pimps in jackets and those big hats and stuff, and it's ridiculous. And I'll point out that I know people, like, people say, oh, that guy's a pimp, or that guy's a pimp, or he's a pimp. Pimps are, like, the lamest human beings in the world. Like, basically, they don't want to work, so they beat and make women have sex so they can get paid money. So pimps are disgraceful. I hate pimps. But that's a side note. As to the central message behind this, I'm definitely on the fence. I think the idea is basically the central concept of a needle exchange is that, well, people are going to do heroin anyway. Let's make sure they have needles so they don't get diseases from using dirty needles. I wonder if that really is just an enabler, and I mean, I'd be interested in looking at scientific studies. I don't know. I think drugs are a bad idea. I don't think if someone's a drug user, you should help them do drugs. That being said, maybe clean needles, and, like, maybe if you don't provide clean needles, then people are just going to use dirty needles anyways. But then again, maybe the money's better spent on getting people off drugs. And I think drugs should be illegal. I don't know if long-term prison is the solution, is probably not. But as for drug dealers, I have no sympathy for drug dealers, and I think drug dealers should get the books thrown at them. So that's my opinion on that.
I was going to respond to one thing you said.
Pimps?
No. Oh, God.
I don't even know why pimps, like, I'm mystified as to why pimps wear those big hats and those jackets. Because if I was a cop, I'd be like, well, there's a pimp. I'm going to just sit here and bust him when he, you know, has his hooker go off or what. Like right. That makes you a walking target, you know? But, I mean, in like, movies and stuff, like, hookers are always, like, hot chicks and stuff. Like if you see those real hookers down on the 10, it's a sad, sad scene. And I wish society or San Francisco, or maybe they do work on getting them out of that lifestyle, because it's a sad, sad scene. And maybe the local government does work on ending that horrible situation going down there.
Okay.
I'm gonna jump in before we discuss this issue further, because this is such a rabbit hole of social issues, and we are like we're like an hour and 20 minutes into this monster. So if we could, gentlemen, let's put a pin in the San Francisco / drugs / pimps / prostitution discussion.
There's good pizza, talk about Riot Fest. There's a good pizza down there too, though. Actually, there is.
We'll talk about pizza later too. So let's blast through these Riot Fest stories so people can stop listening to this podcast. So there were three Riot Fests for which the lineups were announced. I'll take one. John, you can take one. Ricky, you can take one, and we'll see what we can get here. So the 2015 edition of Riot Fest in Toronto was announced. It's going to feature a reunion of Alexis on Fire, which is a big deal here in Ontario, along with a bunch of high-profile headliners, including Wu-Tang Clan, Rancid, Motorhead. The event's going to see Drive Like Jehu, DOA, Echo and the Bunnymen, a bunch of veteran acts there playing alongside a popular, punk bands from these days, including Against Me, Frank Turner, Thrice, Gwar, Andrew WK. So you can find the full lineup over on Punk News, lots of bands. That's Toronto. So, John.
Then there's also Riot Fest Denver. Riot Fest Denver is looking pretty sweet. They got Wu-Tang, Rancid, Motorhead, DOA, Off, The Damned, Andrew WK, Gwar, and a lot of others. Dead Milkmen, and I gotta say, man, Riot Fest Denver might be flying out for it. Looking pretty cool, man. Looking pretty cool. Iggy Pop.
Yeah, and there's also Riot Fest Chicago. And let's see, you can see No Doubt playing.
That's cool. I saw No Doubt twice. No Doubt is amazing live. If you like No Doubt, you will be blown away by them live.
And then there's also Rancid. There's Drive Like Jehu and Motorhead. There's Snoop Dogg, Gohead and Cambria. The Academy is The Devil Wears Prada, Pennywise, Against Me, Rock On Against Me. Andrew WK, Gwar. Let's see, Mariachi El Bronx. They kick ass live. I saw them at FYF. Fest. If you can see them, like, I didn't expect that. That was so good. The Dwarves, Taking Back Sunday, Every Time I Die, Kayetana.
That's a pretty popular Philly act.
Yeah. And Elway, and then a lot more, and that'll be in Chicago. Will be having it September 11th, 12th, and 13th at Douglas Park. And you can find all the lineups and the tickets and the story from Punk News. That's one hell of a diverse lineup for all of them.
Yes. So yeah, there's lots of Riot Fest stuff going on. I think there's going to be some sort of, we're probably going to talk a lot more about Riot Fest in the near future. So, these lineups seem cool. These lineups seem maybe a little bit more, up our alley punk rock than they did the last, like, didn't these guys venture out a little bit more in the past few years and
book
some more pitchforky kind of acts or whatever? So this seems a little bit closer to what people expect.
Where else are you going to see Snoop Dogg and Rancid on the same stage?
I bet you Snoop Dogg and Rancid are on the same stage quite a bit. And Episode of South Park as well. So I think that's it. I think we've burned through a lot of stuff. John, play everybody out with a soothing song.
So like I said, I saw Mischief Brew last Saturday. One of the opening acts was Juicy Carcass, who Ricky has seen. Juicy Carcass is a crust punk rapper, and I hated him the first time I saw him. The second time, I didn't like him. The third time I saw him, I was getting more. Fourth time I saw him, he won me over. And I'm still not a huge fan, and honestly, I don't think his craft is there entirely. I think he's getting better at what he's doing. I don't think he's there completely. That being said, he's something entirely unique, and I've never heard anything like this except from Juicy Carcass. So I'm not a fan yet, but I might be a fan. This is daring music. It's in work. We'll see if he's able to actually pull it off in the next year or so. But he's getting there, and I'm interested to see what happens. And I'm just going to play without further content. This is Juicy Carcass playing his song, Punch Him in the Dick, which is a political song.
Punch punch him in the dick. What? Punch him in the dick. What? Fuckers talk shit. I'ma punch him in the dick. Blah. Punch him in the dick. Punch him in the dick. Motherfuckers talk shit. I'ma punch him in the dick. Yo, look at that chump. See the way that he struts. Don't kick him in the rug. Go nuts on his nuts. Just pop a squat. Start letting off the shots. Like knock, knock, knock. Just go cock this time. To all the cock knockers. Nutcrackers. Ball breakers. Peter beaters. Keep on boxing the baby makers. Put a sock to the jaw. Better make that a double. Just a couple rounds of knuckles beneath the buckle and he'll buckle. If you're in trouble, give him some urine trouble. Hand him his balls and tell him better learn to juggle. Turn his pebbles into rubble. Make him wonder what might have been. Make his son of south but never rise again. Now every man claims to be the toughest and the meanest. But watch it crash, cause soon the losers will be the wieners. And the winners in all the gladiator arenas are always the ones that go straight for the penis. So punch him in the dick. What? Punch him in the dick. What? Fucker talk shit, I'm a punch him in the dick. Blah. Punch him in the dick. Punch him in the dick. What? Fucker talk shit, I'ma punch him in the dick. Punch him in the dick. What? Punch him in the dick. What? Fucker talk shit, I'ma punch him in the dick. Blah. Punch him in the dick. Punch him in the dick. You motherfuckers talk shit, I'ma punch him in the dick. I'll give you Willie and Welp like you ain't never felt. Soon as I've knocked him a pelt, you below the belt like bang. Bust him in the wing like it ain't no thing. Now he really can't hang. But you ain't gotta be a dude, should I dick punch a chick? Cause I don't discriminate when I punch him in the dick. Whether Susie Homemaker or a floozy homewrecker, I'm a decker in the pecker, motherfucker. It could be your mama, better be no drama. You could be the Dalai Lama, I'ma still put it on you with a right, left, yo, dick punched. Then you say, goddamn, my shit's crunched. Scrotum, hell and damn near killed him. I don't care if you live in Baltimore, man, forget about children. You ain't got enough kung fu to bust some ninja shit. Fuck Sun Tzu, you wanna learn the art of war? Punch him in the dick, what? Punch him in the dick, what? Fuckers talk shit straight, punch him in the dick. Blah! Punch him in the dick, punch him in the dick. Motherfuckers talk shit straight, punch him in the dick. Punch him in the dick, what? Punch him in the dick. Motherfuckers talk shit straight, punch him in the dick. Blah! Punch him in the dick, punch him in the dick. You motherfuckers talk shit, punch him in the dick. Kids be talking shit. I'ma drop a fist on your naughty bitch. I got punches of pitiful. You bet your rear end it'll sting when I start swinging on your genitals. Cause then it'll swell up all out of proportion. Looking like an eggplant forced in through your foreskin. Never mind abortion. Forget vasectomy. I got your birth control. Bow! Nut check, homie.
I punch God in the dick. I punch Mary in the dick. I punch Jesus Christ in the dick. Yo, I punch Cheney in the dick. I punch Powell in his colon. I punch George in his bush. I punch Condoleezza Rice.
Punch him in the dick, what? Punch him in the dick, what? Motherfuckers talk shit straight, punch him in the dick. Blah! Punch him in the dick, punch him in the dick. You motherfuckers talk shit, well, I'ma punch him in the dick. Blah! Punch him in the dick, punch him in the dick. Motherfuckers talk shit straight, punch him in the dick. Blah! Punch him in the dick, punch him in the dick. Motherfuckers talk shit, yo, punch him in the dick. Gonna punch him in the dick, watch me punch him in the dick. Love to punch him in the dick, born to punch him in the dick. Forever punch him in the dick, sucker punch him in the dick, fruit punch him in the dick, Hawaiian punch him in the motherfucking dick.
All right, that was Punch Him in the Dick by Juicy Carcass. We are out for this week. If you guys want to email us, it is podcast@punknews.org. And that's all. So we'll talk to you guys next Sunday.